Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh yeah,
let's do it.
That ball's hit pretty well to left. Owner's trouble. Watch this one go. Altuve with his third home run in the homestand and hit number 10. In this same homestand, he makes it 5-0 Astros. Altuve drills one to center field. Back Denzel Clark near the wall. Jumps up. It's gone again. Two for Altuve. His second two-home run game in the homestand. And the Astros lead 9-0. Jose Altuve having himself a homestand. Trying to hold up, that's the ball game. Soderstrom strikes out for the fourth time, and the Astros win it 11-1 to get to four games over 500 for the first time in 25.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. Pitch a left-hander against the Astros at your own risk. Yeah. They may be all righties. They may be all righties in that lineup, but that means when you toss a lefty at them, that's what happens. You get splattered against the wall, baby. Last night, 11-1. Final score, Jose Altuve. We'll give you the post circle of trust numbers in just a second, but we celebrate because for the first time all season, Seth, four, count them, one, two, three, four games over 500. 29 and 25, we celebrate.
Yeah. There's firmly at least a game and a half above the wild card cutoff. So there you go. That's where we are. We adjusted to this last year, being in the wild card conversation.
That's okay.
And we're cool with it now. Yeah. We get it. You start doing more like that. And again, I'm glad you brought up the fact that they saw a lefty, because they barely see any lefties at all year because they don't have any lefties in their lineup, especially now.
Right.
So they see a lefty, and they feast on him. And they just kept taking turns. That was a lot of fun.
That was great.
I was way off on my – I set the over-under at innings pitched for Hunter Brown at 7 1/3. What I didn't account for was him sitting on the bench for vast swaths of time early on, because the Astros just kept scoring.
Yeah.
So he was on the bench for like 17 minutes at one point and 16 minutes the other. And the longer you stretch it out like that, he was everything you needed him to be.
He threw 88 pitches. I think if it was a 2-1 game and not a 10-1 game at that time or whatever, he would have stayed in for the seventh inning for sure, I would think, if it was a closer game.
And it looked like, I think it was the fourth inning where that's where he had one of the long layoffs. And it was it looked like he needed to almost warm back up at the beginning of the innings after some of those long
stretches. He threw 88 pitches in six innings, which isn't terrible.
Right.
But in a few of those innings, like, he got double plays in half the innings he pitched in. And so that it's weird. Like, he threw six innings, six hits, struck out eight, gave up a home run. A bomb, like a laser home run, and didn't walk anybody, and yet I felt like for him it was like a B+, you know, like he was good. He was really good. The strikeouts were all in one, for the most part, in one chunk in the middle of the game where he struck out
six of seven
guys he struck out. And so this is where we're at with Hunter Brown. Like, a start that is empirically dominant, you're like, well, the home run he gave, I am at least, like, the home run he gave up was really hard hit. And there were some hard hit balls. You know, there's a line drive double play that got him out of an inning. Even in the first inning, the double play that got him out of the first inning, that was smashed at Jeremy Pena. Like, so that's the standard that is there for Hunter Brown now. It's like six innings of one run ball is really good. But it's like it's a B+, A-, not his usual A, which is awesome. Like, these are the conversations that you have about ace level pitchers, you know. That, and you're right. It felt at home, Seth, just sitting in my chair, I'm like, just sitting watching the Astros score run after run after run. I felt the same thing you were talking about, which is like, man, Hunter has been sitting for a long time right now.
Yeah.
Like, these innings are going a long time, you know?
And credit Forrest Whitley. If there's one thing I know about Forrest Whitley, you can be reasonably kind of comfortable when he comes in and you've got a 9-run lead.
A mop up.
Or a 10-run lead.
Yeah.
He goes two innings last night.
Yeah.
As you gush and gush about the bullpen, it's a little bit of a reminder of, okay, yeah, but it's still, there's the there's still places we need to hem up a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. So they win last night, and this is a great way to get this part of the schedule started. As you and I have pointed out the last couple of days, this is a patch of schedule where they can make up some ground here, and they don't have a ton of ground to make up. I mean, they're doing fine in the division. I believe the Mariners won last night. They were winning when I went to bed. So they
against the Nationals. They're still 1.5 games.
Still a game and a half lead. Okay, so they're still chasing the Mariners, obviously. But they get the A's this afternoon, try to get a nice little two-game sweep here before Tampa Bay comes down. Tampa Bay, the only team that won a series against you in that 17-game stretch was the Tampa Bay Rays, but they're not playing in that popcorn, pop gun ballpark this time around. You got them at home, and the Astros have been good at home this year. So that was a really nice start. That was a really nice start to this stretch last night. Good to see Christian Walker get a home run. Not a cheapie either. Like, that thing was up near the train tracks. But the big story, Seth, is the fire that you and I have lit under future Hall of Famer Jose Altuve.
Yes.
Since being excluded from the Payne and Pendergast Circle of Trust last week, Jose Altuve, these are the numbers. 12 for 21, 4 home runs, 7 RBI, 9 runs scored, and a slash line of a .571 batting average, .591 on base percentage, and an .1143 slugging. Add it all up. That is a .1734 OPS for Jose Altuve, who was so nonplussed by the Athletics last night that he's like, I don't even feel like coming back out to try to get my first 5-hit game. That's okay. You can let DiCenzo pinch hit for me. That's fine. Blom and Callis were so disappointed that Jose Altuve didn't come back out. He's never had a 5-hit game before. A lot of guys, like Jeremy Peña's had a 5-hit game. George Springer had a 6-hit game back in the day. For as great a hitter as Altuve is, and for as many batting titles as he won early in his career, he's never had a 5-hit game. So as soon as he got that 4th hit, it was really funny because Callis and Blum, appropriately so, started pitching the whole, like, hey, stick around. Jose Altuve's going for his first 5-hit game. And when they looked over in the 9th inning, or I guess it was the 8th inning, bottom of the 8th, and DiCenzo's in the on-deck circle, you would have thought they canceled Christmas. Like, it was, they're looking over there like, oh, Jose's not out there.
I like it better if it stays that way. I like the, you know, it's a nice trivia question someday that however many Hall of Fame the hitters never had a 5-hit game.
Yeah.
They'll be in that distinct list.
Yeah, yes. It doesn't bother me one way or the other. I just thought their reaction to it was so funny.
I thought because not just Altuve's home runs, but just the power in general, including Cam. I mean, that one out, the flyout Cam Smith had to center field, which would have been a home run in, I'm guessing, the majority of ballparks. Like, that was a hard hit ball. He had his double later. Like, Dubon did flash power. Like, there was a lot.
Yeah, no, Dubon's been hitting well lately. Like, Dubon's hitting well enough where you go, okay, he's your second baseman now. Like, don't mess around with Brendan Rodgers anymore. You don't need to slide Altuve into second base twice a week or whatever. Dubon, you know, we know Dubon, what he is defensively. He's been fine for an 8 and 9 hole hitter lately. The numbers on that Cam Smith home fly ball, which, again, I'm with you. That might have been more impressive than any of the home runs just in terms of, you know, just sheer power. He hit it to the deepest part of the ballpark. Expected batting average of .970, and it would have been a home run in 23 out of the 30 ballparks. So Cam Smith, Seth, is still at a stage where I'm not totally judging him by the stats. The stats are getting better and better. His batting average is up to .264. Like, he's a perfectly viable, above-average major league hitter right now. His OPS is in the mid-700s.
And for the last month
he's ascending, yeah.
He's been much higher than that.
Yeah,
he's been a really good player the last month.
He's ascending. He's still somebody who I'm not even looking at the stats, like the batting average and the OPS. Like, if he's looking stout, you know, if he's having good at-bats, if he's making pitchers work, deep fly balls like he hit last night to the .409 center field sign right there, those are all signs of progress to me with Cam Smith. There will come a day where that stuff doesn't matter. Today, it does matter to me.
In the month of May, he's hitting .322 with an .801 OPS, OPS plus of .128. He's been a solidly above average baseball player in the month of May. It's a small sample size, but man, you compare him to the Kyle Tucker's first 30-40 games, when he was a rookie. This is a much more impressive performance out of Cam
Tucker,
Smith.
Bregman, like any of these, a lot of these guys that have come up and struggled at first, and he struggled at first, but he's getting it together pretty damn quick. I mean, he's the everyday right fielder now. Like, there's no need to have him take a day off before an off day. Like, he's got young legs. And I think the thing is, too, man, if he starts to hit, I think from what we've seen the first couple of months is you're not sacrificing anything defensively by having him out there.
No, no. And
he's
when
a
you
good
go to
defensive
defensively, he's better than Kyle Tucker has been in the last three seasons now, because Kyle Tucker continues to be nothing like the guy he used to be defensively.
Yeah.
Whereas Cam Smith looks just like exactly like the young athletic dude that is willing to actually put out and try. Kyle Tucker's been, it's like he's a football player taking plays off in the outfield these last couple years. So far so good. And as long as Paredes keeps it up, then that trade's looking better and better.
Paredes, and it looks like, man, maybe Christian Walker, maybe this new locker is working out for him. You know, he changed lockers, shaved his mustache, got a horseshoe.
Well, he had a mustache for like 2 days.
Hung a horseshoe. Right, and then he shaved it. He's like, no, this ain't working. Like, he seems incredibly superstitious, Christian Walker.
Or just changing up. Sometimes it's not superstition as much as just changing up your routine.
Okay.
Just doing something that just kind of tweaks your brain a little bit.
Okay, well, whatever he's doing, keep doing it. Because Christian Walker has not been great this year. He's been a victim of some bad, even last night, bad luck. He hit a laser right at somebody last night. But still, like, even the expected stats aren't great. Before we get too upset at him, I'm just going to remind everybody, 2 years ago today, Jose Abreu's first season with the Astros was the day he hit his first home run of the year. His first home run as an Astro came 2 months into the season against the A's, ironically. I think it was in Oakland. And he had the mitigated gall to slide into home plate jokingly. I'm like, hey, man, you're laughing about this being your first home run. This ain't no laughing matter to us out here on these streets, okay?
Yeah.
Abreu?
This is like a doctor coming in and telling you that the shape of your wife's tumor is hilarious. Like, yeah, all right, listen. This is landing differently for me than it is for you, Doc.
I know,
okay?
This is a tumor, but it looks like Big Bird, doesn't it?
It's a really, really big Big Bird.
Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it?
No.
Guys in radiology and I were just cracking up over this.
Not funny. Two things. My wife's MRI and Jose Abreu sliding into home plate after his first home run.
Sean, I'll do you one better.
Okay.
A year ago this time,
second
Jose
season,
Abreu, this May 28th, when he awoke on May 28th last year, he had a 108 batting average.
Oh, my God.
His OPS was 284.
And that sounds high. That was 284 OPS. That's incredible. That's incredible. God, he was so bad. Oh, he was bad. What a nice guy, though. All right. Off and running on a Wednesday. Payne and Pendergast with you. So big night for the Astros last night. We'll definitely circle back to that. Texans OTAs start today. So they get on the practice field today. D'Amico Ryans will speak to the media later, as will some of the players. You'll hear that on the station, I'm sure, throughout the next couple of days. Big questions we've got for the Texans as they mix the rookies and the vets together at OTAs. We'll talk about that coming up next. All right, OTAs get started today for the Houston Texans. The one today and there's one on Friday. They're both open to the media, so there'll be plenty of coverage. Keep it tuned to Sports Radio 610 all week long, as you do during the season and throughout the offseason. We appreciate that. D'Amico Ryans will meet with the media today, as will some of the players, so it'll be interesting to see who we hear from. Big questions for the OTAs today, Seth. These are the questions I have, and again, we should point out there are no pads. There's no hitting going on. Probably a lot
no
of
one-on-one pass rush or anything. It's all just 7-on-7, 11-on-11, no pads.
Yeah. So, but to your point, we do get to see maybe some formations and things like that, and at least get the first glimpse of what they're thinking when it comes to first stringers and whatnot.
100%, this is what's going to happen today. Whichever the first offensive line configuration that goes out there is going to be reported, and then immediately afterwards, a coach or GM or somebody is going to remind everybody, hey, don't read into this too much.
Yep.
We're all just, it's going to change day by day. And that might make you feel nervous, and it might make you feel like less secure. Just remember that they're having that same conversation in Cleveland about the quarterbacks that That's like, so at any true. Given point, yeah. any of these five quarterbacks might go out there as right. the starter, this okay?
This is not the greatest spot to be in, where you've got nine offensive linemen vying for five spots, yeah. and they're shuffling all over. But yes, at least it's not four quarterbacks, including two rookies, battling for your starting QB job. Good
don't,
job.
Don't worry. Any one of five quarterbacks might show up as the starter on this OTA, God. But rest assured, we don't feel great about any of them.
Yeah,
okay,
that's a
this
good
is
point,
a competition.
Seth. Yeah, that's a really good point. So you're absolutely right. Now it's interesting. Jonathan Alexander, I have a few more questions we'll hit here, but as long as we're talking about the offensive line, he made a prediction on his OTA question piece that went up on the Chronicle, left to right, as to what he thinks the starting offensive line is going to be.
Yeah,
he had Trent Brown at right tackle, and I feel like every time we talk about right tackle, it's like, okay, is Titus going to play tackle or guard, or is Blake Fisher going to resume the starting spot that he held at the end of last season? Boy, might Ariante Ursary get into the mix here? They used a second-round pick on him. I can't remember one time where you and I entertained the idea, at least me, I don't want to speak for you, where I've entertained the idea of Trent Brown being the starting right tackle for this team.
I've entertained it. I just, with Trent Brown, he's well into his 30s, and he's got he's coming off a torn patellar tendon.
Yeah.
So that's what I just don't know about him. And, like, how bad was the patellar tendon injury and all of that. But, yeah, if he's healthy and he's not on the PUP in game one, then I think there's a good chance he's the starting right tackle. I guess I'm just skeptical that at his age it's going to be a less than 1 year recovery from patellar tendon.
Yeah, dude, I feel like if Trent Brown is your starting right tackle, something's gone wrong with Blake Fisher. You know, like it's that he's just not showing enough to be out there, or that he got hurt in some way and it's Trent Brown. Like, that blindly, if you told me Trent Brown's your starting right tackle, I would say, okay, then Blake Fisher regressed somehow in the offseason.
Well, I mean, he is a didn't, Trent didn't Brown's advance. A better offensive tackle than Blake Fisher was yeah. last year, 100%.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of if he's until I hear that he's, and if he goes out there today and he's running around and he's healthy and everything, then he'll be in the conversation.
Yep.
He's a good player, and you know, all those other guys at right tackle other than Titus Howard are still a work in progress.
Yep. Question number two, will Dameon Pierce capitalize on the reps he gets in 11-on-11, at least in terms of internalizing the new offense? Joe Mixon, according to Aaron Wilson, is going to miss practices here. He was in a walking boot. It doesn't sound like it's serious, but he's going to miss some time, which happened last year, too, in training camp. Remember, Joe Mixon missed a ton of training camp last year.
I believe Aaron Wilson was the first to report anything about Christian Harris, and at the time it was being treated like, oh, just no big deal,
yeah.
whatever. We were out there
That's
the
true.
First day of practice. Christian Harris had been doing – he did an interview a week before training camp about how great he felt,
yeah.
and then we're out there on the first day of training camp practice, and about 10, 15 minutes into it, everybody's looking around like, where is Christian Harris,
yes,
by the way?
And that persisted.
Don't worry about it. It's no big deal. He'll be fine by December.
And that persisted for 14 weeks into the season.
Yeah.
So the Mixon thing, yeah. So I guess good point. If the point is, let's wait and see on just how serious Mixon is, I can accept that. But this is a big year for Dameon Pierce. It's a contract year for Dameon Pierce. They drafted a running back who presumably is going to put some pressure on Dameon Pierce. Dameon Pierce was not getting on the field at the end of last season, other than the Titans game where he looked really, really good. But at nut cutting time, when the team needed to trust multiple running backs, they trusted one running back. It was Joe Mixon. That was it.
Yeah.
In playoff time. So this is a big OTA. This is a big offseason for Dameon Pierce. Let's just put it that way. The third question I have, Seth, what can we learn about Nick Caley's offense in an OTA environment? What is there anything, because this is going to, I hope, look different than Bobby Slowick's offense. A lot of similar elements, I would imagine, but certainly some differences. What can we glean?
I think you're going to read into it way too much, because that's what we do. But I do think you're going to see a more evolved quick game, mm-hmm. and a real emphasis on getting the ball out quickly. C.J. Stroud potentially controlling more at the line of scrimmage.
Oh, yeah.
Might be able to really get a feel for that, because that's going to be something that probably in the first day of OTAs they don't necessarily do a lot. But over as things progress, if we start seeing C.J., A, get up to the line with time to do something, and then B, C.J. actually really working the pass protections, checking plays, more than just a quick, simple either-or audible, that's something we might be able to pick up on.
You know, D'Amico will throw things at CJ. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
D'Amico, the DC, will throw things at CJ.
But with Slowik, the methodology was very much old school Kubiak Shanahan, where don't worry about the quarterback thinking too much at the line of scrimmage. We're going to get up and we're going to run the play, and there will be an option within the play. It sounds like from what Nick Caley has said and what CJ Stroud has said, is that no, this might hopefully look a little bit more like the true veteran quarterbacks. Get up to the line of scrimmage with 15 seconds left on the play clock, and you can sit and diagnose and actually do something intellectually as a quarterback instead of just getting the snap off on time.
I guess this is sort of a question, maybe more of an observation that I'm looking forward to is who's the CJ Gardner-Johnson, any new guys, like who's bringing the juice to this stuff? Because last year, I mean, you were out there, Seth, you know, like Stephon Diggs brought a big energy to these practices, and mm-hmm. he's not there anymore. So I'm not saying there's an energy vacuum or anything like that. There's a ton of guys that really like being out there. It's a swarmy team. But, you know, see, I'm anxious to see CJ Gardner-Johnson, I think, was brought in as much for his energy as it was his productivity. You know, like he's a guy who brings the juice. So that part, in a practice where there's no hitting, there's no pads or anything like that, I'm anxious to see just the interactions with some of the new guys out there.
I think the one thing that stuck from OTAs last year was, wow, this team really likes Kamari Lassiter.
They're
treating him like, oh yeah, he's 100% in the mix to be the starting cornerback. And with Kalen Bullock, it wasn't as clear cut and forthright. And that would match with the types of players they were. Kamari Lassiter was much more polished than Kalen Bullock was. So if we start to see either Jaden Higgins or Jalen Noel really heavily involved with the ones, I'll read into that. Yeah. I think that's fair enough to do. They trust them with running the offense and everything in OTAs, then that might mean something.
Yeah, for sure. And their spot's open at receiver right now, man. Like that is a big audition going on right now. So those are mine. Did you happen to see Diggs living his best life yesterday? Like Stephon Diggs,
he was out on a boat having a party,
participating at a party, yeah,
of his possible girlfriend Cardi B,
right?
And people were making a big deal out of this one video, and the caption I saw, the one that had like 2 million retweets or whatever, said Stephon Diggs caught flirting on video at a Cardi B party, or at a party that Cardi B was at.
Right.
And you watch the video and you're like, he is not the flirter here. This is he is the flirtee.
Yeah.
There were three women just crowded around him with a gaga eyes, just soaking in everything.
Touching his chains.
They were coming after him.
Yeah.
It looked like he was the prey.
Yeah.
I felt bad for him. Like when you watch a cute little koala bear get devoured by some beast. Yeah. He was, if anything, he needed to hashtag me too up out of there. All Stephon Diggs was doing was being himself, and these women were just pressing, like, just in a competition with each other. Like they were looking for a space at the bar.
He's a good-looking guy, man. He's a good-looking guy with charisma and money.
There wasn't anything that looked like he was paying a bunch of extra attention to one of them or anything.
Yeah.
Just leave Stephon Diggs alone.
That party.
Let him live his life at some party that 15 years from now is going to come up in a deposition.
That looked like a fun party, man. Did you see the other videos? The video you're talking about was just strictly honed in on Diggs with the three women around him.
Yeah.
But boy, some of the wide shots of that party that surfaced, that was a hell of a time.
It looked like any party that you and I would take our wives to.
100%.
You know?
Yeah.
Brandy, get over there and shake it a little bit.
Yeah.
For the social media.
Like, is this a Diggs party or is this my 30th birthday party? I can't even tell. On a yacht with a bunch of women twerking. It was the same exact thing. Back in 1999. Yes, same exact thing.
I get the feel that Cardi B and Stephon Diggs are probably of a like mind, kind of like when Jack Nicholson and Shirley MacLaine were together. They're just kind of like, all right, listen, it's a free and swinging time in America and with society. We just, you know, whatever happens, happens. We'll be cool.
Okay. I didn't even know Jack Nicholson was with Shirley MacLaine at one point.
I don't know if he was.
So I'm assuming anybody under the age of 40 didn't know. That was great. You got anything?
I don't know if he actually... No, you know what? I'm messing up because terms of endearment. I don't think he dated Shirley MacLaine.
Okay.
He was just with her in terms of endearment.
Hey, are you excited that we get a joint practice? That was announced yesterday. It was reported. I don't know if the team announced anything, but I think it came from the Panthers side. Canales may have mentioned it at their OTAs that the Texans and the Panthers, baby, going to be practicing leading up to that preseason game. That's fun.
Yeah, the good times.
Good times,
got
man.
Got Blake out there. We're going to get him mic'd up. Bryce Young, not Blake Young. Bryce Young.
Bryce Young.
Hold on, I'm going to give myself a ding.
Yeah, he's going to walk over. He's going to walk over to the Texans, walk over to C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson, and he's going to give him a little. Yeah, get away, little man. We're trying to have a practice.
There will be a feverish attempt to spin any and all comments by C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young.
Oh, yeah. And I will be the one doing it. Yeah.
They're going to try to take some kind of banal statement one of those guys make and turn it into headline porn. And I think C.J. is going to be the one that gets the brunt of it.
Yeah, you don't have to say...
Bryce Young, his actual voice, you can't interpret anything he says as malice.
Yeah.
C.J. will try to say something nice about Bryce Young, and it's going to be interpreted as shade by somebody.
You don't have to say somebody or they. You know who's going to do it. It's going to be me. I'm going to do it. I will take the quotes from both of those guys and turn it into something that it's not. Of course,
CJ does a really good job with those types of questions because he goes over the top and professing his admiration and love for Bryce Young or Jaden Daniels.
Yeah,
anytime somebody brings up, like, hey, what about Jaden Daniels breaking all your records? CJ goes over the top. Like, I've known him forever.
Inland
it's
Empire,
awesome. Good for him.
Yep. Yeah. Inland Empire kid, blah, blah, blah. We also get this.
Oh, I worked back KFC probably a week and a half, for real. Them boy had me cooking the gyoza and the chicken little. Oh, they had me cooking the chicken and all that. The latimbles.
I will be running to a Xavier Leggett media scrum. I will be sprinting over there. That's Xavier Leggett, for those who don't know. And for those of you wondering, what was he saying there? A, I get it. B, he was talking about his first job ever at KFC, cooking the gizzards and the chicken necks and the livers and things like that.
KFC should, at some point, I would imagine he'd get an endorsement out of that. I mean, I would love to. He's a great spokesperson. And he's willing to have fun. He's willing to have fun with people about how people have a hard time understanding what he's saying.
So they
could really have some fun with that. You know, subtitles and all that for whatever he's pushing at KFC.
This is what
Tell me about these bowls.
Yeah.
These bowls look enticing.
Right,
that's how the commercials
got
all
the macaroni and cheese with the chicken nuggets and the this was him picking his winning horse in the Kentucky Derby with Kay Adams.
How should I pick my horse?
Well, me personally, I'm always trying to go for the underdog.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm going for Chunk of Gold. Everybody, they think that he's going to lose.
Who?
Chunk of Gold. That's his name. That's the horse I'm going for
the
today.
I can't understand what you're saying. What?
Chunk of Gold.
Chunk of Goat?
Gold. G-O-L-D.
Chunk of Gold?
Yeah.
G-O-L-D. See, he gets it, though, man. Like, he loves that Adam Thielen is his translator.
So Adam Thielen is...
Short, white Adam Thielen is
I love that little aspect of it because it removes all of anybody that wants to try to, you know, bait or anything on the text line. Like, no, Adam Thielen is the only guy in the receiver's room who understands what Xavier Leggett is saying, all right?
I'm going to tell you...
Okay, this is across the board. People from all locales and backgrounds don't understand what Xavier Leggett is saying.
Unbelievable. We got to get David Tepper to throw a drink at us too, Seth. That's the other thing. The owner of the Panthers. He's very easily riled up.
Well, remember, you know, the Panthers, they were hailed for sending basically their entire organization to all the pro days
for
various
players. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas the Texans very lightly attended C.J. Stroud's pro day, if I remember correctly, which more people use that as fuel for the fire look, the Panthers are out here. They're sending people who definitely don't have a valid opinion to the pro day.
Right.
Meanwhile, the Texans didn't send half their organization. Obviously, the Texans aren't taking a quarterback.
Yeah, no. How about the Panthers sent a bunch of people to waste their time by going to this thing? Like, that's the sign of what kind of organization
it was. No, some of the job titles of the people that were at
insane.
The quarterback pro days, it was crazy
it was
how
stupid
it was.
All right, Astros win last night. We have a Yordan Alvarez update. And we've got NBA playoffs as well. We've got a ton of stuff to get to here in headlines, and we will do that coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, presented by Men's Tee Clinic.
Altuve drills one to center field, back Denzel Clark near the wall, jumps up, it's gone again! Two for Tuve! His second two-home run game in the homestand! And the Astros lead 9-0. Jose Altuve having himself a homestand.
Is he ever, man? He is having himself a homestand. 12 for 21 on this homestand. Ever since being left out of the Payne and Pendergast circle of trust, he's turned back into MVP-level Altuve. Four home runs, seven RBIs over the course of the last several games here at home. Last night, it was 4 for 4 with two home runs. Could have come back out for potentially for a fifth hit. Although I don't even think DiCenzo even got up. I think but Altuve, if they had gotten somebody on base in the eighth inning and Altuve stayed in the game, he would have had a chance for his first five-hit game. Doesn't matter. The Astros win 11-1 last night. Hunter Brown was excellent as well. Here was Joe Espada, Astros manager, following the game on the Astros bats and their starting pitcher.
Yeah, but, you know, that's what, five straight games with 11 or more hits. Swing the bats well, hitting homers, really driving the ball, good at-bats throughout, A1 contributing. But the guy on the mound for us was also really, really good. Hunter Brown, six innings, punch out eight. I thought his stuff was really good. They fouled some pitches off, kind of drove his pitch count up a little bit. But I thought he was outstanding.
The one thing last night, which we've talked about, you know, for a long time now, is okay. The Astros basically only have righties in their lineup, so they hardly ever even see a left-handed pitcher. So they see a left-handed pitcher in J.P. Sears, and they just absolutely destroyed
him. Last night won't help.
Yeah. I got just a little bit of variety in this lineup could go do a lot, not just for guys individually, but just for how teams approach the Astros. But the other fun thing about last night was you and I, the Yiner, right before we came back from break, they showed when Yiner Diaz came home on that Chaz McCormick double. And, Perez-Chica did not hesitate, was waving him home the whole time. Somewhere a couple weeks ago, Perez-Chica finally read the email about aggressive base running with the Astros and how they operate, because he's been sending everybody.
Maybe Yiner should check my email.
Yiner came in with a Jose Altuve-like slide.
He did.
You know, we're just navigated it perfectly, dropped at the last moment. It was less of a slide than
hand
more of like a body blow.
Yeah.
And it was fun. It got started off very early last night.
Very strange statistical quirk. The game, I think it was the 9-2 game. I think it was the last game Altuve hit the two home runs against Seattle. In that game, same as last night, the only starter to not get a hit last night is the guy who's been their hottest hitter of late, Isak Paredes.
Yeah.
He was the only one. Everybody else contributing. And I'm not, this isn't me being angry with Isak Paredes. I think it's interesting. It's just a weird statistical coincidence, probably more than anything, but the two games where they've had their biggest offensive explosions of late, they got an offer out of him, and they got at least one hit out of everybody else. And I think that's the most poignant thing that Joe Espada said in that cut we just played, because it's kind of been this way all year. The bottom of the order has been pretty good for the Astros all year. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Jake Meyers is always in the bottom three or four guys in the order. You know, Cam Smith has started to hit quite a bit lately. Mauricio Dubon has started to hit. These guys have their averages now up. You know, Dubon's up at 271 now. Cam Smith is up at 261. You know, the OPS for Cam Smith is flirting with the mid-700s. You know, it was all stuff that we knew wasn't going to completely hold up. I mean, you and I were looking at the box scores when they were really, really, you know, when they had, you know, whatever it was, like two-thirds of their games are scoring three or less runs. And it's like they don't have a single guy with over an 800 OPS right now. Guys are starting to find their groove a little bit. That's been great to see. Pena continues. He was 2 for 5 last night. He hit a home run. It's a Crawford box cheapie, but it counts the same in the box score as a 500-foot bomb. So that was good last night. 11-1. They're back at it. 110 today. The update on little businessman special. The update on Yordan Alvarez per Joe Espada. Quote, waiting for him to say he's ready to go. He hasn't stopped hitting. Sometimes he hits like multiple times a day. Once he feels he's ready to go out there and play, I'll pencil him in, end quote.
Okay, so they're 100% following the strategy of we want him feeling good for a long time before he goes out there and has to, we don't want this to be a season-long thing.
Right.
So the fact that he's hitting multiple times per day tells me that he probably feels pretty damn good right now.
I would guess so. If it's your typical major league batting practice where he's got to, you know, he's in the cage and, you know, it's not just him swinging in a video booth downstairs.
Yeah. So it's I don't want to put any pressure on Yordan. He needs to come back when Yordan feels like Yordan. I hope he's speaking about himself in the third person to the training staff.
Yes.
I want him to be that. Yordan's that careful with this. I want him to be a complete and total diva.
Yep.
Yordan's going to bat when Yordan's hand like it's ready to bat.
That's right. Texans starting OTAs today. We'll have eyes on that out there at the Methodist Training Center. D'Amico Ryans meets with the media after practice, as well as some of the players.
The two things that we're looking for that I feel like you can take some substance from these other just glorified walkthroughs is, A, does C.J. Stroud have more command at the line of scrimmage? Are they getting up to the line of scrimmage with ample time for him to make adjustments and what have you and be more of a complete guy in control and in the cockpit?
He's supposed to in this offense,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And then B is, just like we saw with Kamari Lassiter last year, are any of these rookies, do they start getting a lot of reps with the ones early on, and does it look like the team really trusts them? So for Jalen Knoll and Jaden Higgins especially, you can tell a lot more about the wide receivers and defensive backs in these OTAs than you can about the linemen. Do they start getting a lot of reps with the ones, and does it look like they're on a fast track like Kamari Lassiter?
If you had to pick a most likely rookie to be that guy of this class, given what they have on the depth chart already and just given the, you know, the pedigree of these guys, who would it be?
Jaden Higgins.
Yeah, I think so too.
Higgins, because of his size and his sure hands alone, is going to be an option. You know, whether he's a polished enough route runner or what have you, when there's times where you just want to get some length out there, mm-hmm. I think they use him. Jalen Knoll, if he's used more in the slot, like that's, it takes a while for rookies to figure out the slot position, and they already have Christian Kirk there as a savvy veteran. So I think that there won't necessarily be the same urgency or expectation to get him as involved as quickly.
I remember Cecil Short said to me one time when we were doing the post-game show together back in the day, Cecil played slot, and he said it's the second hardest position to get up to speed on intellectually other than quarterback.
Like, yeah, you got to read the coverages like you're a quarterback.
Yeah.
To find that soft spot, there's a certain feel element to it, but a lot of it comes with just understanding exactly what you're seeing in coverage. And a lot of the rookies just have never seen just a lot of the little tricks of the trade that NFL defensive backs have. Their ability to disguise in the NFL is so much better than in college.
NBA playoffs last night. We are one game away from Knicks fans rioting. They'll riot either way, win or lose. But 130 to 121, the bad kind of rioting because the Pacers take a 3-1 lead. Angry rioting from New York. Game 5 will be back in New York tomorrow. But 130 to 121, the Pacers beat the Knicks. So the Pacers, bounce back from that horrible coughing up of a 20-point lead in Game 3 of this series. It was funny, the firefighter who's from New York named Hans Perez, who's a Pacer fan living in New York, who wore a Halliburton jersey to a Knicks game and afterwards got all that garbage thrown at him, and that Halliburton himself invited to this game on the McAfee show. We played the audio of that last week. Matt, he was Tyrese Halliburton's guest at this game. The video that surfaced, this guy got a hero's welcome all over the city of Indianapolis yesterday. There were people from the Pacers waiting for him at the airport. He went to one of the firehouses there and was taking pictures with political figures and things like that. This guy got a hero's welcome just for sustaining a few garbage bags getting thrown at him.
That's good, and he's one of the, and so it's not like a typical hero's welcome in Indianapolis where you're met by your fellow fans / first cousins.
Right.
This guy's from New York and doesn't quite understand what he signed on to.
Yeah. He happens to be a Pacers fan who lives in New York. He's not your classic indie guy, I don't think.
Yeah.
Is that your point?
I don't know if he's going to end up late at night finding himself at one of these singles mixers / family reunions or not.
right, exactly.
Speed date your cousins.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You get 1 minute with each cousin. Before you figure out which one you're going to marry.
15 seconds of bliss in that closet right there. Mm-hmm. All right. those are your headlines for today. Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, we'll circle back to the Astros. So ESPN yesterday, I think it was ESPN, we're exactly one third of the way into the season. So they did the MLB Awards Watch. Do you buy that the Astros have two of the top eight candidates for MVP of the American League on their team? And who are they? Are you buying this? We will have that for you coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. Nice long segment coming up. So stay there.